My Taste with Bibendum Wine. Demystifying wines, one sip at a time.
Hello from Nigel Williams and welcome to our programme, which aims to maximise your appreciation of food and drink through the experiences and expertise of our studio guests. In My Taste, we're inviting chefs, restaurant owners and wine experts to share their stories and reveal their favourite wines and dishes. Today, it's a story of what Tamama used to make. But when your mother is a highly respected food and wine writer, good cooking is not something you just read about. It's a way of life. So when Will Beckett set up Hawksmoor Restaurant with his old school friend Hugh Gott, British classics made to a high standard was the obvious direction to take. Well, Will's with us right now. Let's take you back to those childhood days then. And Hugh, probably round at your place all the time because the food was good.
Well, funny enough, he had a foodie family too. His parents ran a kind of award-winning little cafe. We both came from food and drink families. Actually, he was much more foodie than I was growing up. So he, we'd usually be round at his house and he would cook.
Right.
Even when we were kind of like 15, 16, he would cook.
Okay, so he'd be allowed into the kitchen and did he clear up actually? Because that would be the thing that my mum would always sort of say.
No, this. I don't think any sons clear up. That's not part of the deal. And it was weird. It kind of had a different effect on me. In our house, both my mum and my stepdad were really, really good cooks. And there was an genuinely obscene amount of wine in the house. You know, cases and cases would arrive every week from suppliers and supermarkets and whatever. So I kind of had this weird thing where I didn't really take a huge amount of interest in what was going on, but I only ever drank very, very good stuff or ate very, very good stuff. So I kind of developed some taste, but absolutely no knowledge. And that was kind of my early start with it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because you must have gone to some other people's houses where they were having the microwaved stuff and they thought, what's going on here then?
Yeah, I just didn't get it at all. I have a friend who tells me about the frozen kebabs that he would get in the evening for dinner. It does sound like kind of a different world.
So at what point did you decide that you were going to make a business out of it? What sort of direction were you going in originally, Will?
I think we both really liked the idea of getting into the food and drink industry, but had been put off by kind of a few of the horror stories, isn't quite right, but a few of the things people kind of assume to be true about it, of it being incredibly hard work, which neither of us particularly enjoy, being very difficult to make a living from, that kind of thing. And even though our families were in food, not the whole family shared the view that that was a good career to go into. I remember Hugh's grandmother crying when he told her that he was going to open a restaurant. So we went off and we got degrees and real jobs first. And I think it was the realisation that we neither enjoyed nor were very good at having real jobs that kind of pushed us back towards kind of our first passions.
What did you study? I mean, was it any use to, was it business related? Or?
It was incredibly useful in as much as it made me totally unemployable. So I have a French and Russian degree and Hugh has a master's in modern European history. Not a lot of obvious vocational value there. And Hugh has an English literature degree. Also,
it's all right for the menus, I guess.
We have very well written menus.
Yes, I bet you do. Yeah, with apostrophes in all the right places.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what stage did you actually decide, right, we're going to open something up? And what did you do? Because you would have needed money at this point.
Yes,
and going on what you've described there, there wasn't any.
There wasn't any, really. Yeah, neither wine journalism nor running cafe ends up with huge amounts of cash to give to your children. But Hugh had been writing business plans since he was about 17, really, which is bizarre for someone who's completely financially literate. But he finally decided that he wanted to do something in food and drink. He decided that restaurants were too hard, so he did a bar. And he asked me if I would do it with him. And if I'm brutally honest, with a lack of any better options on the table, I thought, I'll go and do that.
Give it a go.
So we were 26 in 2003. Yeah. And we went to see a friend whose dad did have some money. And I think probably we just spun him a good enough story that he half invested and half loaned us £100,000.
Wow.
And with that, we opened a little bar in Shoreditch, which was a mixed success.
A mixed success?
What do you mean by which? I mean, kind of, you know, the people, we learnt a lot. You know, we were in there 80, 90 hours a week doing anything from cocktail bartending to general managing to cleaning the toilets. And it was quite popular, but we never made any money.
So you got rid of the Shoreditch bar without too much, you know...
No, we kept it for 6 years.
Did you? Okay.
We opened a Mexican bar and restaurant. We opened a gastropub in Islington. We won Evening Standard Bar of the Year. We won Time Out Gastropub of the Year. We won Best Sunday Lunch in the UK. But again, we never made any money in the Mexican restaurant, and we started losing money relatively quickly in the pub. And then finally, we came across a kind of small Turkish restaurant on Commercial Street, and we turned that into Hawksmoor.
Hawksmoor was named after local architect, is that right?
Yeah, so Nicholas Hawksmoor was one of three English Baroque architects. He helped Wren build St Paul's, and he built six churches in London, and one of them is on Commercial Street. So we'd always named everything we had after something local.
So I'll try not to do too many plays on words and puns around steaks, because you must have seen them all now. The steaks are high.
Steaks are high,
family steaks, that kind of thing. So was it obvious to you at this point, for you and Hugh, right, okay, we've got to do classic British, the stuff that everybody had when they were a kid?
No, I don't think it was, really. Although that kind of stuff that people had when they were a kid was definitely on our mind, because we'd both grown up in these food and drink families. When we had eaten beef, it was still, still a real special occasion, but it was really, really good. Mm. So both our sets of parents cared enormously about where they bought stuff from. So even kind of growing up in the 80s, when the British beef industry was in a bit of a state, they still, there were still bits and pieces to be found.
Yes.
And they themselves would kind of wax lyrical about, what beef used to taste like.
Yeah.
So we really liked the idea that we could do something that was kind of, everybody has an idea of what the steakhouse is supposed to be like, right? Kind of all a bit sort of macho and American, that we could do something that felt really British, and we could do it with British beef as long as we could find the right farmer, which we did with Tim Wilson, and who grows Longhorn cattle up in Yorkshire on the North Yorkshire Moors.
And featured on your website and everything. This is something that you're very proud of, is that it's where you're sourcing your food from, which sounds so normal today.
Yeah,
that wasn't the case back then, though, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I think the idea that we had in restaurants was still at that point fairly unusual, especially for a higher end restaurant. And although we were slightly kind of shabby and in a not great part of the East End, you have to charge relatively high prices if you're going to have really good beef, because it's an expensive thing to buy. Anyway, our idea was that we would just buy the best ingredients and kind of cook them really, really simply. Mm. Whereas I think most restaurants of a similar kind of price point were putting all of the value into the kind of the skill of the chef and the artistry of it all.
Yes.
And that wasn't really what we were about. So you'd get significantly more food and incredible ingredient at Hawksmoor, but everything was cooked pretty simply.
So when did you actually start making money?
Well, after Hawksmoor opened, it kind of got busier week by week. It got some pretty good reviews, not like the reviews it gets now, which are relatively positive. But it got some pretty good reviews, but it got busier and busier, and it started to make money, which was... And we carried on like that for about 3 years, actually. We kept all four bars and restaurants, and Hawksmoor just about made more money than the other three lost between them. And in 2009, we met a guy who's still on our board, actually, now, who said to us that if we kept the restaurant that make money and we sold the restaurants that lost money, we'd make money. And that was revolutionary for us. We're slightly disappointed we hadn't thought of that ourselves, but yeah. We did that, and that took about a year, maybe.
We'll come back to the success story that is Hawksmoor in just a few minutes' time. Let's get a bit more of a personal thing from you. Well, then, having grown up around, fantastic food, favourite neighbourhood restaurant, where would you go to, local to where you live?
So I live in South East London in West Norwood. I can't lie, West Norwood itself is not blessed with a load of great restaurants. So my favourite thing nearby is it's called Peckham Bazaar. And I think it's described as pan-Balkan, but the food is mostly kind of Greek or food from around that area.
Mm.
The wine list is kind of Greece, Croatia, that southeastern tip of Europe, and it really is amazing. It's probably got about 30 seats, and it was started by two guys who for ages were cooking on, you know, one of those sort of half oil barrel barbecues.
Oh, yeah.
And they just made the most incredible food on this pretty blunt instrument. And anyway, they just had a refurb and now have an actual kitchen. But yeah, we go there, I don't know, every 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. I really like it there.
If the food is good now, they got a proper kitchen.
Yeah, it's still good. It's still good. It wasn't just the magic of the oil drum.
Not just the blunt instrument. So your own restaurants are destinations now, but what would be your destination? Special event, birthday, that kind of thing? Where would you go?
There's a few I really, really like, I guess. So my wife's favourite is the Ledbury. So anytime we have a special occasion together, like an anniversary or her birthday or something, we go to the Ledbury. I really, really like that. If we're going somewhere a bit close to home, there's a place called the Old Dairy in Clapham.
Right.
That I really, really like. Also like the River Cafe. I personally like going places where the food is quite different to what I do in the day job.
Yes.
So Italian, kind of a lot more carb heavy, or somewhere with kind of, you know, sort of smaller sharing dishes rather than large hunks of
Do you find it difficult to switch your head off about, because you'll be looking at front of house, you'll be looking at everything, yeah, you know,
right? Okay,
I'm having a meal. My wife,
wherever we go, I have to sit facing the wall. I'm not allowed to look into the restaurant because I do stupid things like kind of, how many waiters are they working here? Or, oh, that person over there needs a glass of water and they haven't spotted it. And it does. It drives her mental.
Okay.
But everyone I know who owns a restaurant says exactly the same thing. All of their partners have a kind of sub story to tell like that.
What's your favourite dish to order?
Yeah, pasta is a big thing for me. If you can get pasta right, I really, really like it. Something kind of something with a fairly sort of thick kind of red meat ragu is my kind of, my ideal dishes in that regard tend to be the stuff that I ate at home when I was a kid. And I really think there's something in that, by the way, that memories of food you enjoyed when you were young really, really influences what you like now. You know, and you said it a little bit, you know, Hawksmoor tries to do that well. You know, we've got full English breakfasts in the city, or Sunday roast, or, you know, it's food that you remember and that you've got some kind of emotional affinity with. I think that's how I feel about my favourite things, you know, just things that were really, really good when I was growing up and my parents made pretty mean pasta.
Okay, we're going to bring you on to some wine tasting in just a minute, but I just want to go to, you touched on it briefly, about looking at the way people do service. And one of the things that you've got a lot of support for from the press is that you treat your staff pretty well, don't you? You're in the Times list of great places to work. And this doesn't seem to go with working in restaurants. Normally we think of that stereotypical idea of the waiter working far too many hours, getting next to no money. And even when you tip them, the restaurant nicks the money. And yet you've got quite an organised way to make sure that the service goes well.
Yeah, we try really, really hard with that. It kind of feels, I think we noticed in the States that being in this industry felt like a profession to so many more people, and felt like an acceptable profession to so many more people than it did in the UK. And we didn't really see any reason that should be true. But you're right, you kind of look at the reputation of working in our industry and it's not particularly positive. So we always wanted to have restaurants where people worked, were proud of what they did, but felt happy and felt they could kind of build a career. So, yeah, you know, kind of waiters and chefs with us earn similar kind of money to teachers and nurses and policemen. And if you kind of work your way up to sort of general manager, you earn money like doctors and headmasters, that kind of thing. And that's always been important. But we make a real effort to treat people well. We're doing something actually in the next month or so where people can bring their parents into work. A lot of our staff are mid-20s to mid-30s. Someone said to me the other day that their mother, despite having been in the industry for a few years, their mother was still wondering when this phase was going to end. and they wondered that right up until the point where he started working at Hawksmoor. And then she thought, oh no, I can't. Now I understand this feels like a proper job.
Okay.
So we're going to try and see if we can kind of help people with that side of their lives, you know, kind of the acceptance of family
yeah,
members.
Yeah, like a family intervention.
Yeah, something like that.
This can
yeah.
be a proper job.
Yeah, basically, we're going to bribe the parents with free booze. That's our, that's the sum of our of our plan.
Now, I could definitely see that this could roll out still further. Do you have plans? And would you take it even further outside of the UK?
We're taking it as far as we've ever taken it before by going to Manchester next year. I think we're a company that's quite sensitive to kind of the quality of the brand that we have and the people who work in our restaurants. So I think we kind of feel like if whatever we do is good for those two things, as well as, you know, making sense financially, then we would look at it quite seriously. And on that brand thing, I'm definitely sensitive to the idea that you can open too many and spoil a good thing. And we're really not keen on doing that. So, I don't know, after Manchester, we don't have any specific plans to open another one. But then we're also kind of not a company with, you know, a fixed 5-year plan. Mm. We're just trying to open really good restaurants and see where that takes us.
Well, it's serving you well. We're going to have a drink, I think, now. So we're going to get you to choose us a wine.
My Taste with Bibendum Wine.
Will, so we're going to get you to choose a wine for us. I was really quite surprised that you've come up with for somebody who does steak and chips for a living, we were expecting a sort of full-on Italian red or something like that, and you've gone for quite a girly, if I may say, Rosé Brut. This is the Balfour Brut Rosé from the Hush Heath Estate. Why this?
yeah, I guess it's not classically the most alpha male of drinks. I kind of had a couple of things on my mind when I picked it. One of them kind of goes back to what I was saying about food, really, that memories and circumstance kind of influence what you enjoy mm-hmm. a little bit. So I quite often say that I think my favourite ever drink was a pint of Foster's Top because a friend wanted to play golf. I'm horrific at golf. We went out on the most incredibly hot day and I was parched after, you know, hacking a golf ball out of the woods for 4 hours, and then just had this kind of sweet fizzy pint of beer, but it was just the most amazing thing in that moment. And I've really had moments that I've enjoyed with this one, with sparkling rosé, despite it not being the most alpha male thing ever. And then the other thing I think is just when things are good, they're good. You know, I don't think there's any need to get too technical about what wine you're supposed to be drinking at one time. Just go with what you enjoy. And yeah, and I like this. I've kind of gone through a bit of a rosé phase over the summer, so I thought I'd pick that.
I always feel like you're coming out here sort of going, I love rosé.
I love rosé.
You know, this is English, and for the uninitiated, it's really good stuff, isn't it? I mean, the French are actually, you know, jealous of a lot of the stuff that we're producing.
Yeah, it's really really good. It's really really good. I've been with a couple of the guys at Hawksmoor and Foxlow. We've been kind of on the idea that rosé is a fine thing for men to drink, and sparkling rosé is a fine thing for men to drink. One of the manager at Foxlow has started calling it brosé,
yes,
as a demonstration of just how manly it can be. I mean, you know, English wine, a bit like English food, really. Mm-hmm. You know, however long it's taken, 10, 15 years, has gone from being kind of an international joke to something that you take really, really seriously.
So we'll say brosé now that we are in that case.
Brosé, that's a word we're starting it today.
Okay, yeah. So we need to man up and drink more pink wine. Will Beckett, thank you. Best of luck with Hawksmoor. We'll see the Northern Edition and maybe an international edition sometime in the future. Come and see us again. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
My Taste with Bibendum Wine. Find out more about the flavours you like and discover something new by downloading Bibendum's free app. Search Plonk in your app store.